This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hey, how's everybody doing here on a Tuesday? Chris Brown, and look who's next to me. Steve Tasker, back in the saddle.
Hello, everyone.
Good
it's nice to
have
be
you
back.
Appreciate you. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of One Bills Live. A lot going on here at One Bills Drive today. Yeah. Not only are the players on day two of their off-season voluntary strength and conditioning program, of which, according to Brandon Bean and Coach McDermott, about 90% attendance here at the outset in terms of the roster. We also heard from Brandon Bean today, who gave a very important update on a number of things, but chief among them, that DeMar Hamlin has been cleared, fully cleared, to resume his playing career. So he had to go to his last specialist last Friday. That went well, and we'll hear from Brandon Bean in a little bit just exactly how all of this came to fruition. But DeMar Hamlin is back here working out with his teammates, and
he's
part
of the
team. Taking it a step at a time.
Yeah, he's part of the team. And I think, too, when we also heard Sean McDermott today, and he acknowledged that, you know, there's a lot more going on. We saw this at the end of last year as well. It's a big deal mentally and, you know, spiritually for these guys, right? Because they were guys making deals with God, you know, when DeMar was down. They were like, oh, man, I don't care what happens. Just get him out of it. You know, well, here he is. He's back. And so, you know, I think a lot of guys I've mentioned, we've mentioned a lot on the show, the guys, you know, this put the zap on the team for a minute last year, right? And a lot of guys were traumatized by it, let alone DeMar physically traumatized. And how's he going to feel, you know, when he gets out there? And Sean, the way to hear Sean speak, that was kind of job one, really. It was the mental aspect of it, getting everybody in the right headspace. Physically, they trust the doctors, and every single, and without exception, Brandon Bean, and we'll let you listen to it in a minute, but Brandon Bean said every specialist available said he's good to go. It's good to go.
And I thought it was important that Sean McDermott, who also addressed the media today, said, you know, we are going to provide our full support for the mental side of this return as well, because I think, to your point, seeing the toll it took on the players who weren't even physically impacted by it because it didn't happen to them, were, as you said, emotionally traumatized by it. Imagine where DeMar Hamlin was emotionally. So, and I think much like any physical injury, there will be a mental hurdle to clear here.
Yeah.
Knowing that this is not just a contact sport, it's a collision sport. So there are steps still to be taken here, but this is very, very encouraging news that came down today here at One Bills Drive. There's a bunch of other stuff as well. So just to kind of lay it out for you in terms of what we have for you on the show today, you will hear from Brandon Bean, Buffalo Bills general manager, addressed the media a short time ago, and we'll have some of his more notable comments to pass along to you. We'll do that here shortly. And then also addressing the media, Coach McDermott, as well as Josh Allen. So we'll get some of those comments over to you as well, so you can hear just where they sit. You know, Sean McDermott obviously going to be calling plays on the defensive side of the ball this year. That's a new thing and probably the biggest change to how the thing's going to look on the field on Sundays next year.
Right.
Knowing that the offensive coordinator and special teams coordinator are both in year two with Ken Dorsey and Matt Smiley. That's not changing. But the defense could look pretty different from what we've seen in recent years with a different person calling the plays, as we saw with the offense last year and special teams to a certain extent. So we'll cover ground on that as well with Coach McDermott and some pretty interesting comments from Josh Allen, who just addressed the media a short time ago. I would say the most notable of which, Steve, was, I have never been more focused on football than I am now.
Yeah.
That's a guy who I always felt was pretty locked in.
Yeah, I'm sure he was, and he probably was. I think one of the things about Josh is, and for every guy, he was as focused as he could be all the time, doing everything. I think now, I think you get to a point in your life as a veteran and as a player and as where your identity is so wrapped up in it. And certainly, you know, his personal life and all that stuff going on, he's probably putting pressure on himself in a different way now than he ever has. And I think he feels it. And good for him. I mean, I don't think he – I think he's not going to buckle under that kind of pressure. And
well, no,
I think
he never has before. So.
Right. I think he feels differently about this season going in, at least at this early stage of
the
season.
I think – we've said this a long time about Josh. He is one of the most self-aware players that I have ever been around, covering this team for more than 20 years. One of the most self-aware players I've ever been around. And I think he expressed some more of that today. So we'll have Josh Allen's comments for you to listen to as well a little bit later on in the show. But first to the headline of the day, DeMar Hamlin being cleared to return to full physical activity. Here is Brandon Bean lending some details to that coming to fruition.
DeMar saw his last specialist on Friday. So he saw when long and short of it, when he left Cincinnati, came here, it was Buffalo General. He saw a couple of specialists here in Buffalo. And then since then, he's seen three additional specialists, most recently on Friday. And, you know, they're all in agreement. It's not 2-1 or 3-1 or anything like that. They're all in lockstep of what this was and that he is cleared, resumed full activities, just like anyone else who was coming back from an injury or whatever. So he's fully cleared. He's here. And he is of the mindset. He's in a great headspace to come back and make his return.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. I mean, three specialists, presumably, you know, well, he said of a cardiology background.
He said three. It's not 3-1 or 4-1. I don't know how many specialists.
Three specialists he saw since he left UC Medical Center in Cincinnati. Over the course of the last couple of months, few months, he had to see three specialists, and on more than one occasion, because
we
kept hearing how he's always got to go back to that specialist again. Always got to go back to that specialist again. Got a few more meetings with specialists. So three specialists, probably multiple meetings for all of them, and they were unanimous.
Yeah.
He is good to go for physical activity, and they all came to the same conclusion as to what transpired.
Right. That's the key. They had to find out exactly what happened and how it happened, and they all agree on that and what that means going forward. So huge news for DeMar and his career and for all of us who walked through that last month of the regular season with the team and through the playoffs. It was it's easy to forget it now that it's all turned out so well. But
and I don't know if they've, as a team, officially marked it in pen at the safety position, but they certainly know where things stand better than we do out here, just learning today that he's fully cleared for physical activity. But I would like to think that that shores up the safety position all the more if they believe going forward the steps that he has to take are more a formality than a question, if you know what I mean. Because he's entering year three. He's under contract in his rookie deal. He's got 2 years left on that thing. So I think what some people – not knowing about DeMar's situation might have previously said is still a thin position. You may not say that anymore if you know Hamlin's part of the mix now.
That's right.
The safety spot.
Yeah, exactly.
Taylor Rapp, Poyer back, Hyde healthy, Hamlin, Cam Lewis. I mean, suddenly you got five guys there, and then whatever you do with Benford could make it even deeper.
That's right. Now it's like, oh, okay, we're pretty flush at that point, right? At that spot. So it changes everything. And plus, from what we've heard as well, he knows what's going on, right? I mean, he knows the defense. He was on the field, started in it, and played it at a high level. So that does change everything. That's a quality player that you get back into your rotation. You know, you've got these. Look at all the names. Zane Anderson, which is the guy they signed.
Yeah,
DeMar, Micah. They've got Jared Maiden, who's a 6-foot, 205-pounder out of Alabama. Has been out of college 1 year. Jordan Poyer, of course, and Taylor Rapp, the guy from the Rams. So They got some guys now.
It suddenly, I think it changes the conversation going into the draft, is my point.
Yeah, so because early on, you know, because of where the roster was and where we perceived it to be, they were taking the defensive back out of Alabama for sure.
Right.
Because, you know what I mean?
And I'm not saying they won't draft a safety. They could still go ahead and do it.
And they may.
But you know, I think this provides, when we think about what Brandon Bean tries to do going into the draft, it's to fill as many holes on the roster as possible. Not knowing DeMar's situation, you could perceive safety to be a little bit bigger hole. But now that he's cleared to resume physical activity, and again, sitting on this side of the fence, we don't know definitively whether this means unquestionable, 100%, full go, good to go, no other worries, no other concerns. We don't know that, but certainly the path that he's on would indicate that he's traveling down a path to play again. So I think with that in mind, it may alter the feelings of the personnel department going into the draft next week.
Well, we said, too, DeMar, you set the DeMar Hamblin situation aside even, they asked Brandon today, and I don't know if we've got this sound or not. I kind of don't think we do because it was a kind of a side note. He said, what are your needs? And he goes, I don't know. I think we could line up and play today.
Yeah.
You know, now certainly depth and maybe getting somebody who can maybe jump in at the top of the depth chart, maybe at the top of the draft or something like that. But right now they got guys they think they could, if everybody stayed healthy throughout the season, they could line up and play right now.
Right.
So that's where they're
69
at.
69 players on the roster.
The needs are largely minimized from when the season ended to now. Now, going forward, you can make a case. You know, obviously, he also mentioned the defensive tackles. I mean, that cupboard will be completely bare after this season. And he says, okay, that's something you got to think about in the draft.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wrote this down, and you think about what you got, all the stuff, besides who the player is available in the draft sitting right in front of you, you got like five things you got to consider. One is what grade you have on this guy on your draft board. What's the value of – how does it match up to the value of the pick? Do we need that position? That's three. So there's a grade, the value, and the need. Then is the guy big, strong? Is he got traits that we can draft? Or now, can we trade out of that spot?
Yeah.
So there's all those variables that go into this, and you got to weigh every single spot, not only your six picks for the Bills this year, but all the picks for the teams in the draft with you. So it's a monumental puzzle that where all the parts are moving. But that's what you're looking at. So you get into this draft without any true great positional emergencies, but you still got all five of these things you got to think about. Mm-hmm. What grade you have, when it's your turn to pick, is anybody worth that pick? Secondly, is there a position you really got to have? Is this guy available? Can he play the spot? Can we start him and play him? I mean, you're not going to pick a guy, a 5'9", 180 guy to play nose tackle. Or can we get out of this pick?
Right.
You know? So all of that stuff goes on every single pick, not just for the Bills, but for every team out there. And the Bills have to monitor all 31 other teams. So it's a monumental task. But for right now, the point is, I think the Bills feel like, even if you know, everything circles the drain in this draft, we're still pretty good.
There is a decision to be made on night one of the draft, and that is whether the Bills stay put at 27, decide to move up, or decide to slide back and maybe even completely out of round one and into round two, picking up extra draft capital in the process, presumably. So there's that. Brandon Bean was posed the question, what is he more likely to do based on the quality of the draft class? So here is Brandon Bean's answer on the likelihood of moving up or down in this year's draft.
Yeah, I mean, tell me who's coming off the board, and I'll tell you. If I was in Vegas right now putting money down, I would say if we were going to do anything, it'd be more likely to go back than go up. But listen, you're talking to a guy who gets antsy at times and goes up and gets guys, so Vegas probably would still go against what I just suggested would happen.
Yeah, that's pretty funny that he's self-aware enough to know that even though what the draft class what he's expecting to happen may leave him with no other option than to get out of the first round. If somebody gets within striking distance, he may go up. And that's the exact thing that happened last year, Steve.
Right.
There was only one quarterback taken in front of the Bills in last year's draft, and Bean was still running out of players with first-round grades and had to go up two spots to get the last guy they had on their board with a first-round grade, which happened to be Kyir Elam. Mm-hmm. This year, you've got probably five quarterbacks that are going to go in front of the Bills before you get to pick 27.
You throwing in Hendon Hooker for
that? I am.
Yeah, okay.
I am.
Good for you. I'm glad you got him. I'm glad you're on my train.
I think it's going to happen.
You
they
bet it's going to happen.
Get pushed up the board every single year. Even though the class might be watered down in terms of elite talent at the very top of the board, the quarterbacks may push enough of what you have first round grades on down to within striking distance again, where maybe Bean goes up, which historically, Steve, he has done in round one.
So are you saying that Brandon Bean said it's likeliest for us to go out? You think that's smoke?
He has not moved back in round one in his history as Bills GM. He moved up twice to get Josh Allen. He moved up again to get Tremaine Edmonds, right? And he moved up to get Kyir Elam.
We're going to get to 11:30 p.m. with bated breath on next Thursday night, and we're not going to have a pick.
The only time they moved down was in 2017 before Bean was the general manager, and that was the 17 draft when they moved from 10 down to 27 and took Tre'Davious. That was not on Bean's watch. So that's where it is. His history is first round, I'm going up to get somebody. So we'll see what happens, and, you know, we'll see. It could be any number of scenarios that come down the pike or that Bean is presented with, and then he's just got to take the one that he thinks helps his team the most. Brandon talked about the depth in this year's draft class, and he is of the opinion that the elite talent is a little thin this year.
And look for the players that you like that fit what you do and fit you. You've got defined roles if you take them. Hey, this guy's going to come in. He's going to compete to start with player X, or he's going to be a really good backup for us year one, maybe help us on special teams. But we think year two, he's a replacement for someone who's got an expiring contract. So, you know, every year it seems like there's varying opinions. I mean, there's guys that we'll have in the fourth round that go in the first. They're better fits for someone else, maybe as a skill set, maybe there's some medical concerns, maybe personality. It's not the type of person that we want to deal with. So we kind of set the board just for us and go. But no, I think as the draft goes down, there's some depth. It's just not as high. It's more a little bit later.
And that would lend credence to what we've heard about this draft class, Steve, that the best value is on day two in rounds two and three, where, you know, the elite talent's off the board and now you're in the meat and potatoes of the draft. And I would say that also lends to the possibility of people trying to get out at the bottom of round one if the cupboard is bare when they're on the clock. The problem is, if all five of those quarterbacks are gone, is there going to be anybody interested at the top of round two to go up into round one? You know, whether it's for cost control to get the fifth-year option on a player that they like, or if there is a quarterback there, which we've seen more teams do. More teams have made that move into the bottom of the first to do that than anything, although there were five trades after pick 20 last year, just last year.
Right. It gets to the point where that fifth-year option becomes really, really valuable for some of these teams who are going out on the edge for particularly a quarter. Let's use an obvious example, Lamar Jackson. Baltimore trades up to the 32nd spot to get him. They got the extra fifth-year option, and now they got this MVP quarterback playing on the franchise tag, and he's 5 years into his deal. It's a big deal. And they haven't spent a dime over what they paid him as a rookie.
Right.
So that's huge. And teams are willing to sacrifice maybe a few lower round picks to get up a couple of spots to get that fifth year automatic, you know, get the guy tied up for another year. That's a huge factor. But I'm with you, Brownie. You get down into, you know, 20, where the Bills are, 27. I mean, what other spot would there be? Because there's not going to be a wideout. The Bills would take him, right? Yeah. I mean, the Bills would take the wideout if they thought he was going to be a first rounder, get that fifth year option. Do you think there's going to be another team that sees one of the wideouts differently enough for the Bills, from the Bills, to jump up and get a fifth year on him and give up an extra pick? I don't know. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It would have to be a point where some other team, and there it may be, all you need is one, some other team to have one guy that they think is more valuable than the 30 other teams in the picture. You know, I don't know that there's going to be a guy like that deep. So yeah. I think Brandon Bean's right. If you're going to trade, you're going to be out because somebody else has got a guy who says, you know what, I think this guy's going to be awesome. And nobody else believes it.
Right. Brandon was also asked about whether there is a position they need to keep in the back of their mind throughout the course of draft weekend because of expiring contracts on their roster. Steve and I have mentioned this several times. We have talked about a specific position. Brandon Bean talked about that very same position in terms of keeping it in the back of his mind during the course of the 3-day draft.
Yeah, I mean, the one position that we don't have a lot on the future is D-tackle. We don't at this point. You know, Ed's going into his last year. Daquan's going into his last year. Jordan was a one-year deal. Tim Settle last year. So if you were, you know, poking at something that, you know, the Bills would need to keep an eye on, that would probably be where you'd start.
Defensive tackle. Four players expiring contracts on the current roster. You need a young guy in the pipeline there,
yeah,
for not only for cost control, but for year-over-year continuity. I mean, the Bills are fortunate that they got the same four that they had in the fold last year back again this year, getting Jordan Phillips back on a one-year deal, you know, and then they have the other three guys who are on expiring contracts this year, just like Phillips, who signed a one-year deal. So, are you bringing all four of those guys back again next year? Probably not.
Well, not all four.
2024? Probably not.
So you go down the you know, list of guys. There's a bunch of defensive tackles in this draft, and they're all, you know, you got these guys, and pretty quickly you get out of the top, you know, six, and they start turning into these guys that are 6'2", 300 pounds, 6'2", 305, you know. And that's – to me, that ain't big enough. And I come from my own life experiences and teammates and watching these guys out here play.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of
big.
I'm a big fan of big dudes. And when you're drafting in the first round of the NFL draft, I'll say it again, traits mean something.
Yep.
And they are the great equal, they are the great separator. When you've got traits, your high end and your ceiling goes up exponentially. So when you get to 27, there's going to be some of these. If there's a guy out there with traits who's got, shows, you know, some abilities as well as being big and big, that guy kind of elevates to me through the board. Now, you know, you're going to have a grade on him. And, you know, I mean, you don't want to dip down.
Right.
Out of that value for a guy. You don't want to reach for a guy with, you know, first round. But if he's got traits, it seems like, it always seems like less of a reach.
Yes.
Because the guy could develop.
And I think there is enough talent there through the first 2 days. It's not considered a particularly deep year for defensive tackle. You certainly have an elite talent in Jalen Carter. Many people believe Kalijah Kancey is going to be the second guy off the board at the position, but as you mentioned, 6'1", 281. People are trying to paint him in the Aaron Donald mold. And then you've got some interesting players after that. Mazi Smith, who never really put it all together at Michigan, but some believe might be a better pro player than a college player. And you've got Brian Brazee, who was the number one high school recruit in the entire country when he came out in 2019 and ultimately went to Clemson. Had a little bit of a star-crossed career there, but to me, that guy's a little bit of a dark horse option, I think.
He might not be around, though.
At 27?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Hey, big dudes are hard to find, bro.
They are, and I have seen him go earlier than the Bills pick at 27, but I think he's kind of a dark horse option for Buffalo. Wouldn't necessarily come here and go into a starting role right away, but the guy can play. And for a 6'5" player, he is uncommonly athletic. Like, he moves like a 6-foot guy. Just his bend, his strength, the way he can just body torque guys to the ground. You do a lot worse than that guy.
Yeah, the thing about Brazee is that I like, at the point of attack, like right when he engages with offensive linemen, sometimes they can get in on him, and he has a hard time getting off him. But that guy, I think the thing I notice about him, when he comes free, the quarterback is not going to outrun him in the pocket. He closes fast. He can move. Really good turnover on his legs. Tall, big body. He's right at 300 pounds, but he's long. He doesn't look lean, though, you know. And he can run a lot of big-time stunts. You see him when he closes and gets good plays, you see it's almost always crossing over and doing a stunt with one of his line mates because he moves so well. I don't know how good he'll be when he has to stand in there and be just an immovable object. That may not be his strength. He may be able to do it, but he hasn't shown that to me to be a strength.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll say this. You're right. I'll say this. If he's there, I had no problem taking that guy. If he's there, because I think he's better than the 27th pick.
I think that's a guy who will have a better pro career than a college career. He lost one season to an ACL injury. Last year, his head was someplace else, much like it was for a lot of these Bills players during the playoffs, because he had a younger sister who was dealing with a very serious brain cancer diagnosis, and she ultimately passed away from the disease. That's going to take a toll on you and keep you from playing your best football. He actually had to sit out 2 games because he just wasn't in the right frame of mind to play in light of his sister's condition. So,
and I'll say this too. Think about a team that would be the most sensitive to that and aware of how to handle that than the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
So it's a good point you make, Brownie, that he's been around the block and has some loss in his life. Bless his heart, going through that as a 21-year-old.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot. If he is there, I'll just say it. If he's there, he's the guy. I just don't think he will be.
Yeah. There is one NFL note to pass along around the NFL, brought to you by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. Adam Schefter reporting this. The Steelers are bringing in Rams wide receiver Allen Robinson for a physical. And if he passes the physical, it is believed that a trade will in fact be consummated between the Steelers and Rams for the Steelers to acquire the wide receiver. Allen Robinson signed a big free agent deal with the Rams last year, and it did not pan out in any way, shape, or form. It was a disaster. He and Stafford just never clicked.
Well, Stafford got hurt. Yeah.
Their just offensive line was also really beat up.
It wasn't all Allen Robinson's fault.
Compromised the whole timing of the passing game.
Right.
But it got to a point where Stafford wasn't even looking for him. And the only reason I know that is because I had him on my fantasy team. And it was bad. It was bad, Steve. But let's think about this.
It looked good in July, didn't it, though?
Let's quickly think about this, though. Steelers receiving core as it currently stands: Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, Anthony Miller, who they picked up in free agency, Calvin Austin, their fourth-round pick last year, And you add Allen Robinson to that. Now there's a vet in the room. That's a pretty good group.
Yeah.
Not a blazing group, but a good group. You got speed and you have size in the receiving core there.
It's a good move by Pittsburgh, right? I mean, it seems like. I don't know what they're giving up for the guy.
Well, we'll see. But he's got to pass the physical, and then we'll see what the compensation is. I can't expect it to be.
If they can live with him.
Can't expect it to be. After the season he had last year, this is a buy-low situation.
Well, it's a buy-low, but also you got to handle his contract.
So it's not cheap.
Taking the contract is what the Rams are looking for.
And that might lower the price tag even more.
Exactly.
So might be able to get him for a five. I mean, think about Brandon Cooks and what he went for. He went for a five and a six.
Right.
Allen Robinson, after the year he had, may only go for a six.
Right.
And, you know, if you can fit it under your cap, it's worth taking a flyer on him.
I don't say that. I don't know anything about Allen Robinson. I have no reason to believe he's a bad guy. You know, but because – so you're getting a guy that's going to be, A, highly motivated to resurrect his career.
Yes.
And coming in to help a young quarterback, that's a good move for Pittsburgh if they can pull that off for cheap.
Yeah.
Really good.
$10 million in base salary this year, $10 million in base salary next year. That's all the Steelers would be responsible for. That's a bargain.
That is.
For a veteran receiver with proven production.
Well, yeah, with his upside, it is. Certainly they need to see the best Allen Robinson. But, yeah, that could be
a very astute move.
That's like trying to make a number with the dice and rolling five dice, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty good odds.
Break time here. When we come back, we will hear from one Josh Allen, who addressed the media today. Had some interesting comments on his commitment to the game itself, along with his own self-awareness about maybe being a quarterback first and a football player second. We'll let him explain when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Tuesday. Busy day here at One Bills Drive. Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott both addressed the media. We played some of the comments from Brandon Bean. We were going to play you Josh Allen's comments as he met the media a short time ago. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show because DeMar Hamlin has just taken the podium. We're going to take you there live right now.
You know, first I want to just start with just saying I'm thankful and I'm blessed, you know. I'm blessed to have a wonderful medical staff and a wonderful trainers here who treat me with the care of their children. And that tender, loving care just gives me confidence, faith, strength, just all the wonderful things, you know, just to keep going in this journey that I've been on so far. With that being said, also I would like to just say how thankful I am to have wonderful coaches and teammates here in Buffalo that just allow me to grow mentally, physically, spiritually each and every day. So many different aspects. I learned so many different things from my coaches here, my teammates here, you know, the vets here. I'm always learning here, and that's just a wonderful environment to be in and to be around. With that being said, over these last few months, I've been on a journey, and I've seen, you know, some of the top professionals across the country, and their answers to me were pretty much all the same. They were the same. And this event was life-changing, but it's not the end of my story. So I'm here to announce that I plan on making a comeback to the NFL. So the diagnosis of pretty much what happened to me was basically commotio cordis. It's a direct blow at a specific point in your heartbeat that causes cardiac arrest. And 5 to 7 seconds later, you fall out. And that's pretty much what everyone's seen January 2nd of this year. Commotio cordis is the leading cause of death in youth athletes across all sports. So that's something that I personally will be taking a step in to make a change. And also with that being said, you know, all the awareness around CPR and the access to AEDs have been lowering that number as well. My heart is still in it, you know, my heart is still in the game. I love the game. It's something I want to prove to myself, not nobody else, you know. it's just, I just want to show people that fear is a choice, that, you know, you can keep going in something without having the answers and without knowing what's at the end of the tunnel. Or, you know, you might feel anxious, you might feel any type of way, you know, but you just keep putting that right foot in front of the left one and you keep going. I want to stand for that.
Like just getting back out there with the guys. What was that feeling for you when you first entered the building?
It was an anxious feeling at first, something similar to like anxiety, you know. Just dealing with everything over the past few months. It was a great feeling to just see my teammates again. I say the anxiousness was just from, you know, the last time they seen me, it was so recent to what happened. But, you know, they loved me up. They, like I said, I learned so much from them. Anything that I don't understand or that I'm dealing with, you know, I can talk to any of our vets across the board, you know, and they'll always have something for me that I could take with me and add to my what I do.
Of all the things that you've done on your tour of the world there after you were healthy, what sticks out the most to you? Is there a particular, I don't know if it was seeing Biden or what was the moment that really was a wow moment for you?
Not to sound cliche, man, but the wow moment is every day just being able to wake up and just take deep breaths and live a peaceful life, to have a family, to have people that around me that love me and that care about me, and for those people to still have me in their lives. You know, they almost lost me. Like, I died on national TV in front of the whole world, you know what I mean? So I see it from all perspectives. And you know, for them to still have me around and for me to still have them, you know, it's like it goes both ways. And, you know, I lost a bunch of people in my life. I know a bunch of people who lost people in their lives, and I know that feeling, you know. So that right there is just the biggest blessing of it all, is for me to still have my people and my people still to have me.
What has it been like to see the support, not only here locally and in your hometown, but nationally and around the world, and see all of the donations coming in to your foundation and to your charity? Just what has that support been like from really around the world?
It's been wonderful. It's really been wonderful to see the world, you know, see the good that I was trying to do, even before the notoriety. For that to be acknowledged, it was just a wonderful feeling, you know. And now with my foundation through the roof, I plan to save a generation and generations to come. That's pretty much what my dad did with me, you know. You know, he didn't come from the best background, didn't have the most resources, but he always took me and my friends, and you know, he wanted to get us out of our environment. He wanted to give us better opportunities. You know, he created AAU teams for us. He created community days, 3-on-3 tournaments, you know, anything just to keep us active and keep us off the streets, you know. And one of his biggest things is your peers are your biggest influences. So, you know, I kind of took that motto in myself even before all of this, you know, and wanted to do the same for the ones coming after me. And through my foundation, I plan on saving generations.
All right, Mom, what's it like to, are you wearing your number 3 jersey? I'm trying to see. Is that your practice jersey?
I just worked out. This is just a little, this is just Bill's gear.
Were you wearing, we didn't get to see you work out. Were you wearing a number 3 jersey while you were working out, or have you put on your practice jersey, and what was that like to do so yesterday when you did it?
Well, we're just working out. We're not playing football technically yet, you know, so I'm day to day with it, you know. I'm just taking it one day at a time. That's where I'm at in this process. Anytime I try to think too forward, you know, it gets cloudy. So I'm riding a roller coaster of emotions. I'm taking it one day at a time, and I'm trusting God, you know. I'm walking by faith.
Jamar, you've had to be so singularly focused to get to the NFL. It takes so much to do that. With all your experience and everything you've been through, has your perspective on actually playing and being in the NFL and the game of football changed, or will you not know that until maybe it gets a little bit closer to playing the game again?
Well, you know, like you said, it's kind of like my perspective has always been, even before this situation, it was a blessing even just to make it to the NFL. But to make it out of my situation with almost without a scratch on me and to have all the blessings come in my way, you know, it's just been one of those things where I'm just trying to figure out the best way to repay it, you know what I mean? And I've been beating statistics my whole life, you know, and some people might say that coming back to play might not be the best option. But that's their opinion. And like I said, I've been beating statistics my whole life, so I like my chances here.
DeMar, when did you reach the conclusion that you knew that you wanted to come back? And what was the process like in you arriving at that decision?
Well, sitting in the hospital bed, I think maybe that Saturday, I think there were some games on. And, you know, this is around the time where I'm going through a lot in my head, just trying to process everything that was going on. But just watching teams play, watching other safeties play, that's where I seen and felt my love for the game. And that's where I was just like, I don't want to be done yet. But, you know, it was an extensive process to go through for medically, you know, to get cleared and meet with doctors and go here, go here, go here, go here. So it was a lot of hurdles to go over and a lot of steps to take necessarily. So I would say then.
I know that Brandon said that you're fully cleared, everything, you're out there working, but is there a process still? Do you check in with doctors? How does this work? Or are you just basically going about your business unless you need to?
So I pretty much had my last appointment on Friday, which was a checkup. And he pretty much told me, he pretty much recommended me to go back to playing in a way because he said it would be good for the mental health aspect of things. And which I agree, you know, and just being around my teammates, the camaraderie of the sport of football, you know, that's what makes this sport the best in the world is the brotherhood that it creates, the unity that it creates between all people of all aspects of life and just different journeys. You know, it brings them together for one common goal. And, you know, I feel like that's a direct correlation of what happened to me that night, you know, just bringing people together in prayer, love. But that's what this sport does as well. So my heart is in it completely. And, you know, it takes a lot to be great in this game. And I got a long way to go. I got a long journey to go. But I'm committed to it each day, day in, day out. So I thank everybody for being on this journey with me.
What did you learn about yourself during this time?
I learned that I was always, I won't say always, but I learned that, you know, I was doing the right things and living for the right things. And the morals that I stood on in my life, my entire life, were guided in the right direction. So, you know, that's a testament to the people who raised me, my mom and my dad. And, you know, it just gives me confidence, you know, just seeing the reaction of once people learned who I was and, you know, they actually got to know me and know who I was. And it was just nothing but love in return for me because that's all I wanted to put out into the world. So it's just a testament to who raised me. So, you know, moving forward, I've done nothing but just trust my gut. I follow my heart. I let my heart walk in the room before me, and I just lead with love any chance that I can.
Physically, from a lifting weights, running, working out standpoint right now, I mean, are you pretty much, do you have any limitations, or are you on a very similar program to any other defensive safety?
Physically, you know, I'm pretty much building this thing up from zero to 100, you know, but that's the favorite part about the game. I love the process. I love starting from nothing and building it up to something. You know, in anything that you do, you have to love the process most. So I'm excited about it. I'm excited about it physically, but the hardest hurdle is mentally. You know, it's like I said before, it's a roller coaster of emotions. And I have the right people in my corner to talk to and support me mentally. So I trust them and I trust the people here. I trust my medical team and I know that I'm in good hands.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. All right. That's DeMar Hamlin addressing the media. He was not anticipated to be speaking to the media today, but that was before we found out from Brandon Bean that he was medically cleared for full physical activity earlier this week after meeting with one of his three specialists for the last time for the final all clear last Friday. And Hamlin stepped to the microphone, as you just heard a few moments ago, and said, "These last few months I've been on a journey and saw a lot of top professionals, and all their answers were the same. This event was life-changing, but not the end of my story, so I'm announcing I plan on making a comeback to the NFL," which is certainly great to hear, Steve, but you heard DeMar say it himself, and we were talking about it earlier in the show. Somebody has a major knee injury, there's mental hurdles to clear. This was a near-death experience.
Nope. Yeah, he was dead.
Playing the sport that he loves, that is his career, and now he's going to try to go back to that after what was a life-altering event, quite literally. That's like 7 or 8 mental hurdles, is it not?
Yeah, it's definitely bigger than, you know, this ain't ankle surgery.
Yeah.
And I don't want this to get lost in this either. This is a moving thing. It's pretty moving.
Yeah.
The entire country, and not the entire country, but
yes,
certainly
I think so.
The football world.
It was a nationally televised game.
Across the league. And I think it did spill over into the world outside of football.
It was on nightly national news for a week.
And to this point, it could not have turned out more positively.
Mm-hmm.
And today is one more huge step on that. I mean, you know, what are we looking at here? What happens if, you know, I mean, now you got to think, how good could it turn out other than this? Well, it could be, you know, he turns out in the Bills go to the playoffs, go to the Super Bowl, he makes the game-winning interception, is the MVP of the Super Bowl the next year. That kind of thing's on the table now. I mean, this, you know, you never know where this thing's going to go, because it really did. The next week, when Nyheim Hines runs that kickoff back, it had a supernatural feel to the impact it had on everybody's lives.
Yep.
And today is one more step in DeMar Hamlin, you know, being something, this whole thing being something bigger than just a football game. So here we are. I mean, it's awesome. It's a big moment for the NFL, for DeMar. We can take a deep breath and say, wow, it all seems great. Everything that the medical community could have put into this to diagnose, treat, gain awareness from, has happened to this point. I think the league and DeMar have a lot to be thankful and proud of in this moment. So it's awesome, and I don't know how this is going to happen. I mean, DeMar could be playing for another team by season's end. You know, the future is unset. So, but at this point, we're not even 6 months away from when this happened, right? And it's like,
it's January 2nd.
It's like 4 months, so it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Awesome to hear. And DeMar seems great. He seems, you know, 100%. But to have him go out there in the number 3 jersey, somebody asked about it today, you going to wear number 3 again? I mean,
yeah,
that's light years from where
Pump
we were 4 months ago.
Yeah,
it's light years from where we were. So I think all of us had to sit back and like get our minds around where we're at with DeMar. What do we want to see from him? How must it feel to be him? There's a lot in this.
Yeah,
that's why it kind of hijacks our show today. We didn't expect that today.
No, we did not. But it's certainly welcome news to the highest degree. And, you know, we're over the moon that, you know, he can at least plan on making a comeback to the NFL. I mean, even the way he phrased it, it wasn't a lock. I plan on making a comeback to the NFL. That's his plan. That's his goal. And we all hope he can see it through. But you don't know what comes up on the spectrum of, you know, clearing these mental hurdles. We'll talk more about it, but we have to take a break here. Steve and I back with more on this subject concerning DeMar Hamlin, including his release of the official diagnosis as to what happened next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, so we told you that DeMar, in addition to announcing that he is planning on making a comeback to the NFL after getting full medical clearance, from three separate specialists who unanimously agreed. We also got from DeMar what it was that he actually suffered on the field that Monday night, January 2nd, in Cincinnati. He said just a few moments ago, it was determined that I suffered commotio cordis, which is when a direct blow can cause a sudden arrhythmia, and a few seconds later you fall out. And that's what everyone saw with me. So it's been a journey, but I'm very thankful. And he pretty much admitted to, you know, dying on the field in front of his family. His parents were there, for goodness sakes.
You can't overstate the gut punch that was. For those of us who, you know, nobody knew who DeMar was outside of the Bills organization, you know, the NFL kind of circles. Nobody knew who he was before that happened. And even the people, all of millions and millions of people who didn't know who he was, it was a gut punch to watch that night, an absolute gut punch. And it took a long time for all of us to recover. And then to see DeMar sitting there today saying, hey, you know, I've beaten the odds all my life. I like my chances here. It'll send shivers down your spine. I mean, it gives you goosebumps. Good for him. And what a day. What a day for Bills fans and for DeMar and for the league, too, the way they handled it. They just made that game disappear and didn't flinch.
Yeah.
Good for them.
He also said that he's working out with his teammates here the last 2 days. It's largely just weightlifting and conditioning work. And he said he admitted he's starting at zero from a physical standpoint because he's done quite literally nothing from a physical conditioning standpoint as it pertains to football for the better part of the last 3 months. So as he makes his way back, combined with the mental challenges, he said that has been a sizable challenge. One of the doctors told him that returning to football would be good for his mental health, but he says right now that is a roller coaster for him every single day. And I think, again, it speaks to how large the mental part of this challenge is going to be. The bottom line is he's a 24-year-old, young, strapping athlete. The physical will come back just by putting in the work. The mental might be the bigger lift here.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. And, you know, you remember how it was when you were young. I mean, you roll out of bed. These guys can roll out of bed and run a 4.5 40, you know. And just, you're right, Brownie. The more he'll just put in the work and he'll see the results quickly, quicker than most people would. And the mental part of it has got to be really difficult.
Yeah.
Like it has been for his teammates.
Like, how is he not thinking in his head, is this going to happen again when I hit somebody?
Right. Is it going to change?
He's a physical player. Let's not forget that either.
Right. Well, he plays safety. He's got to tackle all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe on every single play. So, he's got some work to do.
It's a challenge.
Physical and mental to get back. But it seems, though, today, from listening to him speak, at least at the moment, he's in a good spot.
Yeah. We'll take another break here. When we come back, we'll also bring you the comments of one Josh Allen today, a player who said today he is more focused on football than ever before in his professional career. That and plenty more from the Bills quarterback here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome to hour number two of a very busy Tuesday, news headline Tuesday, here at One Bills Drive. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. We already brought to you the comments live from one DeMar Hamlin in the first hour of the show. In the event that you miss that, you can go to BuffaloBills.com for details now. After we're off the air at 3 p.m., our show gets re-racked that you can listen to the audio portion either on the Bills YouTube channel or you can check it on BuffaloBills.com. If you scroll all the way to the bottom of the page, that is where One Bills Live resides. We'll get the whole show re-racked for you in case you missed the first hour, because it was worth it.
It really was. One of the things about this that in this day and age so much is wrong about it, you know, on social media, but some of the other things that when you get a bunch of reporters in a room listening to a guy like DeMar with a story like he has, they kept catch snippets that get by you. One of the things that was caught, A.J., Cebulski said this, and he's right. He said DeMar wanted to prove to himself and others that it's okay to be scared and it shouldn't stop you from achieving your dreams. That's some of the stuff that DeMar said today. Man, it's powerful when you read it from a guy like that, that you know, he is afraid of what might happen to him. He is afraid, but it's not going to stop him from overcoming those fears. That's powerful stuff from guys who are actually in an arena where for decades, we've acknowledged how dangerous it can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you hear sometimes about race drivers who get back into a car after a crash. And, you know, guys coming back from smaller injuries and stuff like that. This, to have it illustrated in such a way that DeMar is going to have the opportunity to illustrate when he climbs back in the saddle or when he puts the helmet on again and walks out on the field to take a live snap in an NFL game. It's big. It's unbelievably big, particularly given the accumulation of emotional baggage that we have all placed on DeMar for ourselves. It's pretty awesome to hear him speak like
that. Yeah. Another player who spoke today was quarterback Josh Allen, who had some interesting comments about where he wants to take his own career with the Bills. Here is Buffalo's quarterback.
DeMar Hamlin was fully cleared, and obviously this has been a very long journey, 106 days ago. But for you as a leader on this team, what was it like to be working out next to that guy again?
Yeah, well, I haven't gotten to see him since I saw the news. We kind of work out at different times. The defense goes a little earlier. We go later and switch off for meetings. So I haven't been able to give him a big old hug yet, but it's been good to see him in the building. You know, right when this thing happened, that was his mindset from the very start was, I'm going to play again. And you know, you're never going to doubt a guy like that who's had a lot of adversity in his life, and he's continued to find ways, and this is just another obstacle that he's been able to get around and push forward, and super excited for him, super excited for our team. You know, he's a heck of a football player, and we love having him back.
Josh, how did everything go with the elbow this offseason? I know you said there wasn't surgery required, just some rest. How did all that rest go? Have you had to see anybody, and how are you feeling now?
Yeah, I haven't seen anybody. It feels really good. Threw a couple times, and again, no issues. So, you know, just getting back on track. Obviously, within this first phase and a little bit into the second phase, not a whole lot of throwing here in the building, but trying to find other outlets to be able to get guys moving around, getting the ball in the air. So, stuff we're still working around, and that's the rules we have to work with, and it is what it is. But we'll find ways where we can still get some work done.
No impact on the golf game?
No, not at all.
What's off-season training been like? I mean, obviously you've talked so much over the last couple of years about your work with Jordan. Have you done anything different this offseason?
Not a whole lot different. You know, it was a lot of rest, a lot of mental recovery. You know, this last season was pretty draining throughout, physically, emotionally, mentally. Again, just trying to reboot. And you know, I think at this point in my life, I've never been as focused or locked in, you know, in football than I am right now. So I'm very excited. I'm looking forward to, you know, getting here with the guys and building that team camaraderie and, you know, having guys over and again, just doing that piece of it, because I think that's such a huge piece of it when you're able to trust teammates inside and outside the facility. And again, we're in Buffalo, so there's not a whole lot to do here in terms of outside recreation and stuff like that. So having, again, guys over to my spot, you know, breaking bread together and having a good time, and again, just getting to know each other on a deeper level, I think that pays dividends in the season.
When you say you've never been more focused than you are right now, is there like a leading factor to that? Is it because of last season? Is it just because of where you're at in your career? Like, what's driving that focus?
I think it's a mixture of a lot of things. But again, going into my sixth year, understanding this offense fully, and again, just trying to dive in deeper with Dorsey and Joe Brady in our quarterback room, just trying to be the best leader, the best teammate, the best quarterback that needs that I need to be for this team to win football games. And again, we need to get over that hump, and I understand that. We understand that. And again, you got to look from within sometimes, and again, just finding new ways I can get better. Taking care of myself on the field, whether it's taking hits, protecting the football, not putting the ball in harm's way. And again, just finding better ways to help this team win football games. There's a lot of times last year, looking back at film, where one, I was just being careless with the football, careless with my body. At the end of the day, availability is the best ability. So a lot of different things that I'm working on right now and learning from. And, what I'm excited about is our quarterback room with Matt and having Kyle here and then Joe. And then Lube's in there too, just going over concepts that we love and diving deeper into those things. So my eyes are in the right spot, and I'm putting the ball where it needs to be on time, on target, making sure everybody's on the same page in terms of route and distance and angle of routes. Because there's some times where we can clean that up as a team, and I think it's going to better us. And having those talks with Dorsey about concepts that I love that we need to keep working on. And this is the time to do it.
Steph Diggs raised some eyebrows on social media with some of the I guess, cryptic posts that he made. Is everything good with him and you?
Yeah, absolutely. Steph's going to Steph. I love the guy. He really is. He's one of my favorite people on this planet. He's so fiery. He's so competitive. He wants the ball in his hands 24/7, and, I'm never going to not like a guy like that. He wants what's best for the team. I know he's not here right now, and I wish he was here, but OTAs are a little bit of a different beast when it comes to all that stuff, but I'm just looking forward to getting back with him and working on things and continuing to get better because, again, he's the best receiver in the league, and he helps us out a lot on this team. So, again, just looking forward to continuing our relationship and our on and off the field and continuing to make plays for us.
And you talked about mentally draining, how mentally draining this last season was with DeMar, snowstorms, the tragedies and all that stuff. Did you find yourself having to do anything different to decompress or perhaps put it aside to just separate yourself from and from all that happened?
It was a kind of learn as you go. There's a lot of moments where really unprecedented times where not many teams have ever had to face the adversity that we faced last year, and I'm so proud of how we handled things, still being 13-3 in the regular season. We won our first playoff game, obviously didn't win the second one, and we want to win our last game. That's the main goal, is to win our last game. And obviously we didn't get that done, but to look at the season, how it went, how I think successful it really was. And I know people get caught up in that last game, and it's easy to get caught up in that last game because we didn't perform at our best. And it's obviously something that we want back, and it's going to continue to drive us. But the way that we handled ourselves, the way that our team came together in some very dire times, I'm very proud of the players that we have on the squad, and again, that we're bringing back. We've brought in a lot of new guys, and to have that leadership on this team to kind of bring some of these newer guys up and show them what the culture here is all about and what we're trying to accomplish. I think it's a good thing that we got going, and that's hats off to our front office and our head coaching staff and the leaders that we have on this team to keep pushing us in the right direction.
Seeing Gabe go in year three, now going into the final year of his contract, you've been here your third year when you kind of ascended, really took that leap. What has he meant to you and the offense through the first 3 years he's been here?
Yeah, I mean, he does all the dirty work that you ask him to. He runs the clear outs. He runs the posts, the goes. He's running the deeper routes. And, again, I think sometimes when you look at stats are a little bit misleading when it comes to him. But again, the dude just, he does all the right things. He does what you ask him to do, and he goes above and beyond. He strains each day when we're working out here. He's a guy that you can trust and depend on. You can't say a bad word about the dude. He's one of my favorite people too. We hang out a lot, and he works his tail off. So it's very easy to trust him. And again, I think putting him in better situations, to have some catch and run opportunities and maybe move him around a little bit more is going to help us, help this offense, help him. And again, the things that we're looking at right now in our offense and really how good our offense was last year, if you look statistically at our numbers and then you look at the turnovers that we had, and that's big time on my part. turn the ball over too many times. And if you can say we limit maybe half of those and then add those to the numbers that we already have and the opportunities that we're giving our receivers and our running backs, I think it's only going to be positive outcomes. So, again, continuing to work on that and, again, putting our guys in good situations to be successful.
You've talked a lot about, people have talked too, about the way you play. I've never heard you use the word careless about playing. Was there any sort of epiphany about that this year during this offseason? You've heard it from enough people about how you need to play and protect yourself a little bit. Has anything really changed?
I don't think so. I think, again, getting into I know it sounds crazy, but I'm getting older, you know. It's like I can't continue to do this. I know when I'm using my youth, I feel like I can. But over the course of my career, I'm going to have to learn to adapt and change. And, you know, I've always had the mindset I've been a football player first and a quarterback second. And at some point, that's going to have to switch. When that point is, I don't know. I guess I'll let my body tell me. But I do want to be, like I said, I want to be the smartest quarterback with the football in my hands. I don't want to put the ball in harm's way. Because I know how detrimental that is for our team with those interceptions and the fumbles. So, again, just finding ways to work on that, being more decisive with the football, and, again, just getting back to maybe some of our more familiar concepts where guys know exactly what they're doing, I know exactly what they're doing, and, you know, try to be successful that way.
That was an interesting thing you said there about being a quarterback first, maybe a football player second, or switching those. Is that a message that has been delivered from the team, or is that internal?
That's internal, and you know, I'm a realistic guy. I think very logistically, and I know Father Time's undefeated, and you know, football's a game where it's not if you get hurt, it's when you get hurt. You know, it's going to happen to anybody at any point, and throughout the season, if there's a guy 100%. Playing 100%, I don't believe them. You know, we go through our bumps and bruises, and it takes a while to heal up as you get older. And again, finding a routine that now works for me, whether it's spending more time in the training room or hot tub, cold tub, and just being smarter with that aspect and developing that routine to allow my body to heal faster and being smarter as time goes on.
It's been a topic really since you came into the league because, you know, your ability to run and the plays that you can make has been so good for this offense. But the messaging from the team about avoiding those unnecessary hits and sliding and stepping out of bounds, where are you at in terms of, you know, you feel like, I guess, your development in those areas and how much is that being driven home by Sean and Brandon and in the front office?
No, I mean, I really wouldn't say it's being driven by them. I know that they've had a few questions in the media too, and those have been pointed out. But at the end of the day, it's just being smart with the football, smart with the body, and understanding situational football really better. You know, if there's a third down where we got to get it, I'm gonna do whatever it takes to get it. But if it's a, you know, second and 10, I got 9 yards to go, no need to put the shoulder down and try to, we can get it on third and one with our players and trusting the guys around me. And, you know, and if not, so be it. We'll put Von Miller back on the field and let him go to work too. So,
Josh, has it been an interesting realization to start to look at yourself as a player who is getting older? I mean, you're sitting next to one who's played in the NFL for 10 plus years now. Is that something that you've started to do this offseason with how you take care of your body and go through an offseason?
I mean, a little bit. I think, again, it happens quick. Like, this is, I'm going into my sixth year. It doesn't feel like it's been that long. And, again, I feel like I'm learning something new each and every year. And, again, just leaning on some of the older vets that I've been around and learning how kind of they do it and how to, because, you know, there's a lot of ways to skin a cat, but there's really one way to be successful, and it's doing it the right way. And, again, just trying to find what the right way is for me.
All right, that's Josh Allen addressing the media today. And, you know, I think maybe some of the more eye-opening comments from him came from his own approach to season number 6 and how, you know, we've heard him say, I'm going to try to protect myself more. And I would say last year there were some times where he ran out of bounds more often, got the ball off before he got decked out of bounds or something like that. Not every time, but more often than he had in the past. And now by the sounds of it, it's like he viewed himself clearly as a football player first and then a quarterback second, and now I think he's getting to a point in his career. I mean, he only turns 27 next month. He's got plenty of time left on his career calendar. So the fact that he's talking about making himself a quarterback first and a football player second, I think is very revealing as to where his head is at in approaching the game each week.
When you talk about that, you're right. His head, let's face it, I mean, it all starts between these guys' ears. You know, their commitment, their decisions, the way they approach their game, their commitment, all of it, their preparation. So it remains to be seen how that'll affect his decision making, because that's what you're talking about, right? What decisions he makes on the field at any given moment. Is he going to toss the ball away more? You know, we saw him start to do that even as early as the second half of his rookie season, and then more and more, particularly his second year, he started getting, you know what, I got to throw this away and live to fight another down. And now you see him do it when he needs to. It's, you know, same thing goes for when he pulls it down. He's going to run with it. Is he going to slide? Is he going to go? You know, we see him, he finishes so many runs in the air. You know what I mean? When he's jumping over that last guy and then taking a couple steps and going down. The Chiefs game where he comes out around the end, hurdles that guy, which has become, you know, a meme for Josh. How these words in April of 2023 are going to affect the season in 2023, 6 months away from now, we may never know how it's going to look different. But if it saves him that one hit, saves him a couple of hits, saves him some wear and tear, adds some quality time at the end of his career where we're going to see him play better for longer in a Bills uniform, man, you got to think, okay, we may never be able to see tangibly what it means. Yeah. But it's enough to know that he's thinking about it, that the club's thinking about it, and if it makes him make a decision that has a great outcome, I don't know how you're going to quantify that, because he makes so many decisions that have great outcomes already. Mm-hmm. But if the guy comes out, plays for 14 years, and you know the Bills do get a world championship or 10 out of it, you got to think he's doing some things right. He's always done a lot of stuff right. We'll see if he can distill that into more right and less wrong.
This is the time of the year when, as far as field work, it's basically conditioning and then work in the weight room. But there is classroom work that goes on now that is permitted, and I found it interesting. That was the most detailed I've ever heard him discuss the conversations and the debates and the problem solving that's done in the quarterback room, to the point where he's talking about angles of routes, not just run the 12-yard hook and I'll hit you when you turn, or I'd show me your body language like this so I know I'm putting it on the right shoulder based on how you're going to turn. They're talking about the angle of the route as well in an effort to create more space between the receiver and the defender. And I think that communication in the quarterback room will obviously be disseminated to the receiver room as well, and the tight end room and the back room, presumably. But getting some detail-oriented comments from Josh Allen about some of the things that are discussed in there this early in the – it's day two.
Right.
This early in the game, it's almost like, man, he's really tightened down the screws on everything here, it seems.
Everything gets better when you have a long history with players in the room, with Josh and Gabe Davis and Steph Diggs now. They're, you know, going to the fourth year together. You get to a point where you can have conversations that you can't get to because you still don't even know if the guy knows exactly the right route he's supposed to be running, let alone change the angle, do this. It just takes a long time to get there. So when you talk about players coming in this free agent market and the current state of the league, where you got new players every year who may play significant roles, their ability to communicate nuances and the reasons behind those nuances is really crucial to the success of the offense. It becomes part of the job description. You have to be a guy who can have conversations about the offense you're running early in the process of your acclimation to the team, so the quarterback can say, listen, when you come out on this, you got to get to the outside shoulder of that guy so that I can see with your body language how you're going to come out of this, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Instead of saying, hey, you got to run an out route here. Well, then you got to say, no, you got to get to that outside shoulder of that guy, give him a little bit at the top of the route, and then break and make sure you get your eyes around so I know where you want, you know, that kind of stuff. It's those kind of conversations happen. And sometimes for some guys, it takes a year or two to get into the offense where you feel comfortable thinking, oh yeah, okay, I know exactly what I'm doing here. Yeah, okay, I can do that kind of thing. Because when you get out there and you line up, it's like, am I doing the right thing?
We heard that today when Sean McDermott mentioned Nyheim Hines.
Right.
Who's still trying to master some of the nuances of the offense, and he got here at Halloween last year.
Right.
But he's still working on that now in the offseason, which I think speaks to probably why his usage within the scope of the offense wasn't as extensive as maybe fans had anticipated walking in the door.
See, let me give you an idea. What happens is you come in October, you come into training camp with these guys, you got them at OTAs. Ken Dorsey's out there saying, okay, here you go, guys. Here is a foundational building block of our offense. And then here's a couple of pieces that we're going to stack on top of it. And then here's a couple of pieces for each of those pieces that we're stacking on top of it. Then you get to October, Nyheim Hines is learning 50,000 bricks at the top of the wall rather than the two or three foundations at the bottom, right? So you come in, you got 50,000 things to learn, and you're all over the place rather than starting with the foundations that you can build off and go. So when you come in October, you're trying to learn the nuances of 50,000, you know, small pieces of the wall of the picture that are out now instead of the foundational colors that you started with back in April, May, and June. So now when you can go back and start building on the basics of the thing and start from there, it gives you a better chance to do it right at the top when it's a bunch of small pieces rather than just one or two foundational pieces. I don't know if that makes it clear or makes it cloudy.
No, I get it.
I don't know.
We do have to take a break, though. When we come back, we'll have some more comments from players who addressed the media today. We'll tell you who that is when we return. You're on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Players back, working out, doing their thing, getting in the classroom as well as they tune up for OTAs next month. And one of the other players who addressed the media today is a guy on his way back from a torn ACL suffered last November. That would be Von Miller, who gave an update on his health situation, as well as some people, you know, that he knows in the league that might be looking to move out of their current NFL situation in a place, Arizona, say. So here is Von Miller.
Feels good to be back in Buffalo. Weather's still crazy, but, you know, like I've said 50 million times, in this facility it's always sunny. The type of people that we have, the type of environment that we set up here with the Buffalo Bills, it doesn't matter if it's 90 degrees outside or 5 degrees outside. We have a very enjoyable environment to work in, enjoyable place to come to work, and we got great people here. So it's a great mixture for a great organization.
Josh was just talking a lot about his mindset and how refocused and after a draining season. Where's your mindset at going through what you've done this offseason and where you're at?
This is my life. You know, this is Josh, 6 years? I'm going on year 13. You know, 34 years old, I've spent third of my life playing football. I've just become comfortable with the type of year that football is. It just feel like we was just in Arizona for a Super Bowl, you know, and we're right back here at OTAs, and I just try to always be in the present, in the now, whether that's OTAs, training camp, season. I think when you get up there in age, you just start to find the beauty in the little things. So being able to come up here, being a way to get away from the kids and come up here and, you know, be with my guys and, you know, be back in this type of environment is super cool for me.
How have you been with the kids?
It's been great. It's been great. You know, they're two totally different beings, but they my boys, and I love them to death. Val is starting to run now, so, it gets kind of scary sometimes when he just takes off. And, you know, Vic, is he's starting to open his eyes and walk around. I mean, not walk around, but open his eyes and track you and stuff, too. So it's super cool. It's super cool to see their interaction with each other, too. It's like they already know that they're brothers. And, you know, it's super cool for me as a dad.
When it comes to your knee, I mean, I got an email last week that you're going to be in some rodeo thing. Next week in filming something, aren't you?
I guess, you know, my assistant, she just tell me what I got today. I try to put all my focus on being the best father and football player I could be. But my assistant, she is great. Marnie Colbert is super great, and she just tells me what I have. So that's next week. So I haven't got my next week schedule yet. I just take it week by week.
You're going to be testing out your knee. I mean, knee should be doing pretty well if you're going to
be. Yeah, but my knee's good. I feel like for me being able to golf, but I started golfing probably midway through March. So being able to golf for about a month now, it feels like it's downhill for me. You know, being able to, you know, walk around normally, go up and down stairs, walk around the golf course, and not really just think about it. I was walking and doing stuff before, but still, you know, subconsciously you're thinking like, okay, I got to make sure my gait is right and got to make sure I'm not favoring it. Now you just get up and walk. Now just get on the golf course, swing, and just walk around. So I feel like everything now is just downhill from here. The guys that I've been working out with in Dallas, with Dr. Cooper's office and coming here with the Buffalo Bills, I got the best of both worlds. And I really don't have much to do. I'm 34 years old. I play golf, I kick it with my kids, and I go to rehab. So I'm working out in the morning and I rehab at night every single day. So I really maximize my day with trying to get back as fast as possible.
Is there anything you can take from the first time you went through a serious knee injury like this, where like you went through the rehab, you've done it before, you know what it's like? Is there anything like lessons learned or things you remember from that first time?
I guess, you know, before it was a lot of uncertainty. Like, you know, I would look down at my leg and be like, how am I going to be a football player again? And now I just know, like, this is part of the process. So I guess the second time around is, you know, I guess the second time around, I'm not stressing over it as much. You know, I just go out there and I just try to lift as much as I can, rehab as much as I can. And I know when you put the work in, you'll get the results. And sitting here at month four, you know, I feel great. I haven't, you know, started doing football stuff and rip moves and all of that stuff, but I feel great, and I feel positive that I'll be ready to go early in the season for sure.
On that note, how does it work with communication between you, the medical, and coaches? You're going to want to play. You're competitive, that's what you want to do, but you've also gone through this.
Yeah.
Do you have to be protected from yourself a little bit here to kind of rely on the medical too as well?
Man, I trust these guys. I trust these guys here with everything, man. And I think when I got here, you know, I was on they talked to me about a pitch count last year in the season. It worked out great. You know, I had 8.5 sacks through 9 games, and, you know, everything worked out great before I got injured. So, you know, I just especially now knowing Brandon Bean for another year, and, you know, knowing, you know, Coach McDermott and Coach Washington for another year. And especially, you know, Nate Bresky and the medical team, man. Whatever they need me to do, man, I'm gonna do it, and I'm gonna be ready to go when I'm ready to go. And, you know, my job is to come in here and really build their trust up and let them see me move and let them see me work to, you know, really be confident and let me go out there and play.
What were your impressions of defensive coordinator Sean yesterday?
I was great. I mean, you know, I was at Denver Broncos with Coach Fangio, so. You know, Coach Fangio was the head coach and the defensive coordinator, so it's not foreign to me. It's not, you know, it's not anything new to me. I know exactly how to look and how to be. So I'm excited. You know, it's not like Coach McDermott was away from the defense last year either. He would come in and he would, you know, give his tips and, you know, kind of coach us up at certain points of the week. You know, he did that last year too. So now it's just him there full time whenever we have our defensive meeting. So. Fully confident in Coach McDermott. He earned his reputation off of having great defenses and building a great defensive team. So I'm super excited to have him in there full time.
What does GM Vaughn think of the 27th pick? And have you been studying this draft class, you know, more than most players, would you say?
My take would be draft the best player available. You know. It's not like, you know, we, you know, of course we're going to get picked off some of the guys that we really want, but, you know, in my opinion would be just draft the best player available. It doesn't matter if it's a guard, receiver, defensive end, quarterback, or whoever. Like, I'm a big fan of just drafting the best player available. And over time, you will build a team, especially, you know, an organization that we have here. We got great coaches. So you put great players here, and over time, we'll have a great team. We already got a great team, but this will ensure we can keep a great team.
All right, so that's Von Miller, who, you know, he's only in month four of his rehabilitation after surgery, ACL. He's had an ACL before in his career, and he's already saying it's all downhill from here. All the hard stuff's over. I was like, what? Okay.
I don't know. I think, and I remember, it wasn't a fully torn ACL.
Partially torn. You're right about that.
So that does make a difference. But nevertheless, I mean, you can tell he's a longtime veteran in the league. You get to a nonchalance about some really hard things in your life when you get to that age, where you've been through this surgery and that injury and that thing, and you've overcome this and you've gone to there, and you just kind of, I know what's going on now. You know what I mean? You get the vocabulary of a guy who's been around the block more than that. So it's he does have the ability, doesn't he, to make you feel comfortable with what's going on.
I almost feel like he's just going to will himself back to full health prematurely.
Right?
You know what I mean? Like, he's just going to wave a magic wand and the Von Miller body is going to be good to go again. He's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you wonder if his physical abilities are otherworldly, even after a major injury like that.
Yeah.
We have to take a break here. When we come back, Steve and I with some final thoughts on all that we heard today. We'll bring that to you next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And a lot went on today, and even more became official about a minute ago. Shaq Lawson officially re-signs with the Bills. We had heard reports of that late last week. It is now official. Shaq has put pen to paper, so it is officially a done deal, a one-year contract for Shaq to play another year in Buffalo. The trade terms have also been agreed upon between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Los Angeles Rams for the acquisition, Steve, of one Allen Robinson. The veteran wide receiver returns to the state where he played his college ball, Penn State. He'll be playing for the Steelers next year, provided this all goes through. Here are the terms. The Steelers get Allen Robinson and a seventh-round pick, number 251 in the draft. The Rams get in return a seventh-round pick, number 234. They obviously had to shed the salary, because this just in, Steve, now that Allen Robinson's off the roster, the Rams have 45 players under contract, and they are still cap-strapped.
They can't even go to training camp.
Do you think they're saying the same thing about draft picks now? They need as many as they can get for cheap labor.
Yeah.
They're trying to just move. They moved up 17 spots in the seventh round.
They can sign a ton of guys at the veteran minimum and rookie unrestricted, undrafted rookie free agents, all that stuff. But they're not going to be a very good football team. And
here's the other part of the trade. There was $15 million in guaranteed, $15 million in salary, 5 bonus, 10 in base for Allen Robinson this year. The Rams are paying 10 and a quarter of it.
Really?
The Steelers are only paying the remaining $5 million. And they gave up a 7. They didn't even give up a 7. They're getting one back.
Yeah, they got a 7 for him. They got Allen Robinson.
They gave up
for
a 7 to get
bucks.
Allen Robinson and a 7.
They got Allen Robinson for on a 2-year deal with first year only $5 million. That's pretty good deal. I'm surprised not more teams
Rams
were
in
on
dire
that.
Dire straits.
I'm surprised no more teams were in on that.
That's it for us here on a Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow on Wednesday at 1.